This morning, for just a few minutes, I want to talk to you about what is your life. Years ago, Ralph Edwards had a program that was a popular one when television was black and white. What is your life? And they have some reruns now. I saw one the other day. And you know those shows then, you didn't have vulgarity in them. You didn't have the nudity that we see today. And they were just interesting programs. And I like to see a lot of those old reruns. And one of them was, What is Your Life? Well, we all have life. And what are we going to make out of it? Someone said life is like a mirror. We only get back what we put in it. Our life is a one-way street. There's no return. Life is a measure to fill, not a cup to drain. Life is an investment, not a salvage. Life cannot be weighed or measured in a laboratory or analyzed in a test tube. Life, brethren, involves force and action, and we're responsible for the way that we use our life. We are the masters of our destiny. We have the power of self-direction. And let me impress upon your minds this morning that you can make your life anything you want it to be. And there's a lot of room, my friend, at the top. But we're going to have to lift ourselves up. Oh, we can be motivated and encouraged by others. But Weldon Warnick is the one who decides what he's going to achieve and on what level he's going to live. And the same thing is true with you. In James chapter 4 and verse 14, our text this morning, the inspired writer said, Whereas ye know not what ye shall be or what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. The old shoemaker said, Life is what we make it, sweet or bitter, hot or cold. As water slaking thirst, we take it. Life is either ashes or pure gold. What is life? And let me suggest to you that life is a gift. God gave us life. In Genesis chapter 2 and verse 7, God made man or formed man out of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. There is divinity, ladies and gentlemen, in every one of us to that degree that God created us, made us in his own image. When Paul was on Mars Hill, he spoke to those Athenians who were influenced by Grecian philosophy. When he taught, declared unto them the unknown God, and in verse 28 he said, For in him, and a preferable translation would be, For by him we move and breathe and have our very being. As your own poet has said, we are his offspring. And I hear the writer of Hebrews saying in chapter 12 and verse 9 that God is the Father of our spirit. And so God gave us life. And he gave us this life to be used for his honor and glory. Are you listening to me? Not to waste or dissipate, but to magnify him. In Revelation 4 and verse 11, speaking of the Lord, for he created all things. He created all things for his pleasure. Those things he created that are and were for his pleasure. In Ecclesiastes 12, Solomon comes to the conclusion of that book, and he says the whole duty. Now, duty will be in italics. The whole of man is the idea. Someone said the whole happiness of man, but I prefer just the word whole. The whole of man is to fear God, reverence and respect Jehovah, and to keep his commandments. But you can look around us today, and people have lost their respect for God. They no longer fear him, even as the Jews in Romans chapter 3. They've been influenced today by secular humanism, by materialism, that they've forgotten God. And as Paul wrote in Ephesians chapter 2 about the Gentiles, ye who were dead in trespasses and sins, hath he quickened. In times past, who walked according to the course, and the word course means the philosophy and the thinking, the attitude of this world, the age of this world, the fashions of this world, and the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience. For we had our conversation, our manner of life, or behavior in the lust of the flesh and fulfilling the desires of the flesh and the mind. And he said, we're by nature the children of wrath. That characterizes our society, our world in general. But don't let us forget, brethren, that we were made by the eternal, omnipotent God to praise and glorify and honor him. We are made, if I might reiterate, in the image of God. Life is a gift. Use it wisely and properly as God directs. Secondly, life is a preparation. We only travel this way one time, never to return again. Where are we going to dwell in eternity? Are we going to be ushered out into the afterworld unprepared, not ready to meet God? That's why the prophet, as Mike used it the other night in Amos chapter 4 and verse 12, prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. And we're going to meet him in judgment. It's appointed unto man once to die, and after that, the judgment. So we need to get ready. Now, like that song, Randy, in this book, I want to be ready to meet him. That should be the ambition, desire of every person. I want to be ready to meet him when he comes in the by and by. We hear Paul saying in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things that are done in his body, that every individual may receive the things done in his body according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad. Get ready. When Paul came to the end of his earthly sojourn in 2 Timothy 4, when he wrote from the Roman prison before his execution, in verse 6 he said, I am ready to be offered. Can you say that this morning? Can I say that? That I'm ready? We need to prepare. Here was the parable of the 10 virgins. You know the story as well as I do. 5 were wise and 5 foolish. And here was the custom of the day, and they're waiting for the bridegroom to come. And 5 didn't bring enough oil, just a little bit in their lamp. The other brought oil in case they tarried. And the oil went out. And they turned to the other 5 and said, let us have or borrow some of your oil. They didn't have it to supply. When they went to get oil for their lamp, the bridegroom came, and they went in. The door was shut. The 5 foolish virgins came, and they knocked on the door. Let us in. He said, I don't know you. And the message, friends, for us, that we don't know when the day or the hour will come. That's what Jesus said in verse 13 on Matthew 25. And the point is, and have the oil to be prepared, to have the character, to have the kind of heart and soul that is sanctified and cleansed in the sight of God, that when Jesus comes, we'll be found blameless. Be ready. Don't let that time or death overtake you unprepared to meet the Lord. Only Jesus is the answer, brethren. And I see that on billboards. I see it on bumper stickers. Jesus is the answer. And that's true. But that in of itself doesn't tell us how do we prepare. Our Lord said in John 14 verse 6, I am the way, the truth, the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. And when Jesus gave the great commission, went to all the world and preached the gospel to every creature, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He that believeth not shall be damned. I've got to believe the gospel and obey the commandments of Jesus Christ to be prepared. And then as a Christian, I'm to be faithful unto death. And then receive the crown of life. Am I ready? Am I prepared? Life is also a multiplicity of choices. Man differs in this respect from God's other creatures. If they have any choice at all, and say the gorilla or the ape, it's very, very limited. We generally say they operate by instinct. But I have choice. I decide as to whether I'll obey the Lord or whether I'll continue to follow the god of this world. And we see choices with the consequences in the Bible, Old and New Testament. Adam and Eve made a choice and they were cast out of the Garden of Eden. And because their choice, brethren and friends, today we suffer the heartaches and sorrows, yea, death itself, because our first parents disobeyed God. Here was Lot that looked up and saw the fertile plain or the valley of Jordan, and he pitched his tent toward Sodom, and what a price he paid. He lost his whole family. Those who came out with him were immoral. His wife looked back and turned to a pillar of salt because he was greedy and he didn't consider the influence of wicked Sodom. How many times today do we base our judgment on greed and on a better job over yonder somewhere, but forget what it's going to do to our family, or whether there's a church there or not, or whether we're going to start one when we get there and be faithful to the Lord. Joshua said, "Choose ye this day whom you shall serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve Jehovah." And here was that grand patriarch who recognized his responsibility as a dad, as a man, as a father. He said, "Here's the choice that we make. We're going to serve the Lord." Old Pilate had the power to release Jesus, but he's a politician, just like a lot of them in Washington today. He kind of looked at it as which way it would be better politically for him to decide. He said to them, "What shall I do with you?" He'd like to release him, I think. He found him innocent. But the Jews said, "Crucify him, crucify him." And so he yielded to their request. Oh, what a choice. To put his stamp of approval up on the execution of the Son of God. But I wanted you to particularly turn with me to Hebrews chapter 11 for just a moment. Consider the choice that Moses made. And there's a sermon here within itself on choices. But we're talking about life. Life is a multiplicity of choices. And I want you to look in Hebrews 11 verse 24 beginning. By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused. Now here was a young man that refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. The next passage, choosing. Let me just stop there. Can you imagine the prestige and the power and the pomp and the money that he would have had access to and received by being the son of Pharaoh's daughter? But he made a choice. Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. And that's as long as it lasts. And I know sometimes, brethren, it's difficult to deny ourselves the inclinations that we have, the propensities of the heart. But look at eternity in contrast to just a few years here. And he could bask in the wealth of Egypt. He could have all of the power to command, and people would respond. But he said, "I choose to suffer affliction with the people of God." Verse 26, why? Esteeming the reproach of, and my footnote says, for Christ, greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Moses, why did you make that choice? Because I see beyond this life. I see Christ. I see the recompense or reward. I can see the inheritance that I'll have spiritually, and whatever I must deny myself are hardships to experience, I will do it in order to have immortal life with God, eternal life with God. Life is a multiplicity of choices. It's either the devil or Jesus Christ. It's either God or idols. It's either obedience or sin. We're at the crossroads. We stand daily, ladies and gentlemen, to make wise, prudent decisions as to which way we're going to walk. And the road home isn't easy, Pete. It's narrow. It's hard. It's difficult. And that's why Paul said in Galatians 6, be not weary in well-doing. I get tired. You get tired. Sometimes say, is it worth it? But then I look as Moses did beyond, and I heard a denominational preacher years ago as I was coming back from a meeting, and he was talking to from Hebrews chapter 12, when he says, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of faith. And then he's talking about when Peter was walking on the water there at the Sea of Galilee, where Jesus beckoned him to come out of the boat and come to him. And Peter stepped out, and he was able to walk on the water until he looked down. And he began to sink. Now I want to tell you something, friend. When things get very difficult. We got discouragements and disappointments. We got hurdles to overcome, obstacles in our way. There are mountains to scale. There are valleys of loneliness to go through. There's hurt in our hearts. Look unto Jesus. And he said, the reason we fail so many times is because we got our eyes in the wrong place. And that's so, friend. When people quit serving the Lord, they got their eyes in the wrong place. They may be looking to the preacher and he lets them down. They may be looking to some friends of theirs, members of the church, and they disappointment. We're eyes in the wrong place. And I want to tell you this morning, not a one of us has ever suffered like the Apostle Paul, but he endured. And when we think we've got problems, just look to Paul. And when we think we really got problems, look to Jesus Christ, to whom Paul looked. Well, I'm about to run out of time. Life is a multiplicity of choices. But life is also a conflict or war. There's a civil war going on in every heart in this audience. Every person has his conflicts. And there's a tugging in each direction. Don't think for one moment, friends, that I don't have these conflicts. Don't think for a moment that I don't have temptations and desires to do that which is wrong. But it's a matter of whether wisdom, what I know is right, what the Bible teaches is so same as you, is going to be adhered to, or whether I'm going to give in to the carnal desires of my flesh. In Galatians chapter 5 and verse 17, Paul said about the flesh, that the flesh warreth or lusteth against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary. Now listen, these are contrary one to another. They're just opposites, antithetical to one another. So that ye can, now listen, so that ye cannot do the things that ye would. I desire it. But if I'm going to be led by the Spirit of God in verse 18 and other passages, I cannot succumb to what these inclinations are in the carnal man. Turn for just a moment to Romans chapter 8. And here is a contrast between those who walk in the flesh and those who walk in the Spirit. And he's talking about children of God, not the alien sinner in contrast with the Christian, but here's the Christian who's walking after the flesh, and here's the Christian who's walking after the Spirit. And look at verse 5, "For they that are after the flesh do mind the things of the flesh, but they that are after the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace." Now, if I want life and peace, follow that which is spiritual. And I know what's spiritual, brethren, and I know what's right, and I know what's wrong. The works of the flesh are manifest. They're open. They're declared. And I know exactly what it is to be carnal minded if I'm a child of God and have any basic knowledge of the Scriptures, and what is spiritual. Drop down, if you would, please. Verse 8, "So then they are in the flesh, cannot please God, but ye are not in the flesh, but in the Spirit, if so be that the Spirit of God dwell in you. Now if a man have not the Spirit of Christ, he is none of his." Verse 12, "Therefore, brethren, we are debtors not to the flesh, to live after the flesh. For if we live after the flesh," verse 13, "ye shall die." So we have to walk after that which is spiritual and right. And that conflict is going on constantly in our lives. We make a choice. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 9, verse 27, he says, "I bring under my body, bring it in subjection." Revised Version says, "I buffet my body." And buffet is a boxing term. It means to pummel. The idea is you take a fella and you just hit him and hit him and hit him until he's blue with bruise marks. Paul says, "I pummel my carnal appetites. I buffet myself." You don't think he didn't have a struggle? And if he had a struggle, friends, I guarantee you we have a struggle. And he said, "I just pound my body, as it were," not literally, but using this boxing term. He says, "I curb it. I bring under subjection my appetite, lest after I preach to others, I myself might become a castaway." And he got the job done because Paul went to heaven. One other thing, and I quit. And that brings us back to our text in James 4 and verse 14. Where life is a vapor, or as a vapor. And you look in the context, and here's these businessmen. They were making plans. They were going in the city. They say, "Today or tomorrow, we'll go into the city and we'll remain a year." Had it all figured out. And we'll buy and get gain. Well, they were acting foolishly because they didn't have any assurance that they were going to have tomorrow. In fact, brethren, verse 17 in that context means when we don't look to God and give Him the glory and the honor and realize that He has things in His hand and under His control, we don't know what will be tomorrow. "He that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him is sin." That's the context. Now the principle applies when we neglect to do anything that's right. But I can't plan for tomorrow from the standpoint that I know that I'm going to do it. Now, that doesn't mean I don't look forward to tomorrow in case it happens, but I don't know that it's going to happen, take place. You don't either. Because life is a vapor. And just like that, it can be gone. I talked to Brother Jim Cassidy last Saturday week ago about 11 o'clock, and he passed away about 2. You don't know. He realized, I suppose, that, of course, he had some hope. He didn't know what this therapy would do, but he realized his days were short, most likely. But he didn't realize it was going to be 3 hours later. And you don't either. I don't know. Here you see the steam coming from a tea kettle. It goes into the air momentarily and dissipates. Years ago, you had the old steam engine. It'd roll along the track, and the smoke would come back and go down over the train, and after a while, it just disappeared. He says, life's that way. In Job 14, he says, what is man? He said, man is born of a woman and a few days and full of trouble. He says, life, he says, it comes forth as grass, as a shadow that fleeth. Peter says in 1 Peter 1, verse 24, that all flesh is as grass. And the grass comes and it dies and wilts. And here's the flower so beautiful in the summer. And the frost comes and they pass on, they pass away. And I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, listen to me. There is going to be a spring that comes in the life of a Christian, as we used to sing, springtime in glory. There's going to be the budding, as it were, of the roses. And life will flourish, an unending day in the presence of God. But this life is just for a little while, and it passes away. Psalms 90, verse 12, God says to number, now listen to it, number our days. We number the years by birthdays. God says number your days. We only live one at a time. Number them. And since life is so brief, we cannot afford merely to spend our lives. And we certainly do not want to waste our lives. And listen to this. We must invest our lives in those things that are eternal. Life is an investment. Invest it wisely. It's brief. And it'll pay dividends in eternity. The clock of life is wound but once. And no man has the power to tell just when the hand will stop at a late or early hour. Now is the only time you own. Live, love, tell with, or toil rather, with a will. Place no faith in tomorrow, for the hands may then be still. What is your life? Jesus Christ came to give us life and give it for abundance. A relationship with God that never ceases if we continue to drink of the water of life and eat of the bread of life. This life is forevermore. You can share in it this morning if you're not a Christian. And if you turned away and you walk no more with the Lord, you can come and reclaim that life. What was lost in the Garden of Eden has been restored in the Garden of Paradise, in the closing book of the New Testament. We can have life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Jesus shared it. You can lay hold on it. When you come today, believing, repenting, confessing your faith, be baptized, you need to be a Christian. What does the world have to offer you? That is lasting. Nothing. Why did Moses choose the affliction with God's people rather than joy the patient of sin for a season? Because the recompense or reward. Moses in heaven today, at least in the paradise of God, he's there today because of that faith.
salutation. Will you come this morning? Say, I will be a Christian. I will go to heaven. Will you come right now?